Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Michael's Saturday Night Surprise, and I'm your host tonight, Bob Braxma. Tonight, I'll be taking you on a very surprising and informative journey.
There were many taboos back in the Victorian era. You couldn't reference bodily functions. You couldn't show affection in public. Divorce was taboo. Looking pregnant or even using the word pregnant was off limits. An exposed female ankle was considered scandalous. It's said that even the legs of pianos were covered in homes. As a result, taboos also made it difficult to express your desire for someone. That's where floriography came in. Simply put, floriography was the use of encoded messages through the arrangement of flowers. This secret flower language allowed people to express feelings which otherwise could not be spoken. So, if you were to receive a bouquet of yellow acacia, that meant someone was secretly in love with you. If you were to send that person back a bouquet of majorum, that would mean you were blushing. If that person were to then send you a fragrant Spanish jasmine, that meant they were intoxicated with your sensuality. If you were to reply with a larch bouquet, that would mean you find their advances bold. If they sent you back a bunch of linden flowers, that meant they really wanted conjugal love. If you offered a single china aster, it meant you would consider their request. If they responded with a bouquet of red columbines, that meant they were anxious and trembling. But if you sent over a bunch of orange flowers, that meant you decided to go with celibacy.
Boo.
Floriography also spawned a subgenre of flower dictionaries, allowing people to quickly thumb the pages looking for the real meanings behind bouquets. Much was forbidden in the Victorian era. With so many taboos, the secret language of flowers was one of the only ways to get messages through. The modern world of marketing has had to deal with many taboos over the years, and it too has had to create ways to get messages through. How certain taboos were broken by marketers is a fascinating bit of history. And when certain taboos were finally breached tells us a lot about our society. Some taboos were broken years ago, some were broken only recently, and many have now blossomed into major advertising categories.
You're under the influence.
Helen Lansdowne Reaser joined advertising agency J. Walter Thompson in the year 1907. She was a hugely influential figure in the history of advertising because she was the first woman to plan and write national advertising campaigns. One of her first campaigns was for Woodbury's facial soap. When she determined the audience for facial soap was women, she played into the fantasy she believed all women harbored, which was to attract a man's complete attention and adoration. She was among the first ad writers to add emotion to advertising instead of just practicality and price. Using emotion, Helen Reaser broke a long-standing taboo in 1911. she introduced sex to advertising. Reaser created a landmark print ad for Woodbury's that showed a man with his arms suggestively wrapped around a woman as he nuzzles her neck. The headline said, "A skin you love to touch." It created a sensation. Many readers were outraged, but many must have been intrigued because sales of Woodbury's facial soap skyrocketed 500%. It wouldn't be the only taboo the advertising world would break. At about the same time, Lysol began marketing itself to women. Not as a toilet bowl cleanser, but as a feminine hygiene product. I kid you not. Lysol print ads broke a big taboo by talking about feminine hygiene. They promoted Lysol as a douche to, quote, safeguard her dainty feminine allure. The ads used fear as a persuasion tool, suggesting that a woman risked ruining her marriage if she didn't practice the ritual of using Lysol to kill intimate germs and odors. But here's what you have to know. These Lysol ads weren't about cleanliness. Feminine hygiene was a euphemism for birth control. These Lysol ads were for contraception. Under the 1892 Criminal Code in Canada and a similar law in the United States, using birth control was taboo, considered obscene and anti-religious. An accused person could serve a 2-year jail sentence. That fueled sales of under-the-counter contraceptives, like Lysol. As a matter of fact, Lysol became the best-selling method of contraception during the Great Depression. If you're squirming at the thought of using Lysol as a spermicide, you should. The formula Lysol used back then was far stronger than the Lysol we use today to clean bathrooms. Even though it was marketed aggressively as safe and gentle, many women were poisoned, many more experienced severe burns, and some even died from using Lysol as a contraceptive. When you look back, those early Lysol advertisements were really breaking two taboos. One, for being the first to talk feminine hygiene. And two, for using code to subtly address contraception. Toilet paper has a delicate history. A man named Joseph Gayety produced the first commercial bathroom paper in 1857. He sold packages of individual sheets and proudly put his name on each one. But that bottom-up recognition didn't help. Nobody bought it. After all, why pay for toilet paper when pages from the Sears catalog and Farmer's Almanac were free? Then in 1890, the Scott Paper Company came up with an idea to sell perforated toilet paper on a roll. With indoor plumbing emerging, it was the right product at the right time. But the subject of toilet paper was taboo in the Victorian 1890s. People wouldn't ask for it, retailers wouldn't display it, publications wouldn't advertise it. Even the Scott brothers, founders of Scott Paper, were too embarrassed to put their own name on their own product. They needed a marketing idea. They hit on an ingenious solution. They gave their corporate customers incentive to buy toilet paper by customizing the packaging. So, for example, the Waldorf Hotel in New York offered Waldorf toilet paper in its bathrooms. Macy's featured Macy's toilet paper, and so on. Soon, Scott was producing private label brands for over 2,000 companies. Around 1903, Scott Paper finally decided to halt all private label marketing and brand their product once and for all as Scott Tissue. To skirt any lingering taboo backlash, they advertised their toilet paper as a medical product to help stop the spread of dysentery, typhoid, and cholera. The Scott brothers created a mascot called Mr. Thirsty Fiber, who looked like an angry Abraham Lincoln in a top hat, shaking his fists at moisture. By 1925, Scott was the leading TP company in the world. Toilet paper became so popular, the Scott Paper Company didn't have to lay off a single worker during the Depression. But while toilet paper was popular, advancements were slow in coming. As late as 1935, the Northern Tissue Company boasted that their toilet paper was splinter-free. By that time, the taboo around marketing toilet paper had been long broken. Today, the average person uses 57 sheets of toilet paper per day. It's an industry flush with profit. Condoms have been around for centuries, but condom advertising was strictly taboo. Despite the growing popularity of condoms throughout the sexual revolution, condoms still weren't advertised in mass media. Until one fateful night in 1975. Local station KNTV in San Jose, California, interrupted their rerun of an old Peter Sellers movie with a commercial showing a couple running across a beach in slow motion.
To everything, there is a season. And a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to weep. A time to laugh. A time to mourn. And a time to dance. The makers of Trojan condoms believe there is a time for children. The right time. When they are wanted. And Trojans have helped people for over half a century safely practice responsible parenthood.
To many, the message was jaw-dropping. It wasn't just a condom commercial, it was a contraception commercial. The KNTV switchboard was jammed all night. Unlike many American stations, KNTV was independent and didn't adhere to the National Association of Broadcasters' Code of Ethics, which strictly banned condom commercials. Even so, they pulled the ad. Then, something interesting happened. KNTV News began covering the very controversy it had created. They even played the ad as part of their coverage. When KNTV later polled their viewers, it appeared they had a change of heart. Viewers voted 8-1 in favor of the commercial. It seemed they just needed a little time to wrap their heads around it. Then came the AIDS epidemic. On June 5, 1981, the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention introduced the world to what Prince would later call the big disease with the little name. It had infected almost 300 people and taken the lives of 120 others. One year later, it was christened AIDS, or Acquired Immune Deficiency Syndrome. The disease was spread primarily through unprotected sex. But condom advertising was still taboo. In 1987, Surgeon General C. Everett Koop criticized television networks for refusing to sell airtime to condom manufacturers. He strongly believed that running condom ads on national television was vital in the fight against AIDS, saying condoms offered the best protection against infection, barring abstinence. Condoms were no longer a matter of STI prevention, but a matter of life and death. By the late 80s, major networks began airing PSAs promoting condom use solely for AIDS and STI prevention. The New York Times announced it would relax its policies and run a condom print ad. The only stipulation by the publication was that the word contraceptive not be used. Then finally, in 1991, 10 full years after HIV/AIDS was first identified, the Fox Broadcasting Company became the first national television network to break the taboo and run a branded condom commercial. It was a 15-second Trojan ad that aired during an episode of the sitcom Herman's Head and was seen by over 7 million American households. It turns out the ad was approved for television because it didn't mention the contraception side of condom use. Other ads had been rejected for the mention of the word spermicide. Fox made the decision just 4 days after basketball superstar Magic Johnson made this announcement.
Because of the HIV virus that I have attained, I will have to retire from the Lakers. Today.
But the network would only run condom ads after 9 p.m. Eventually, that too would change. Today, condom advertising is a major marketing category, and ads aren't limited to airing at certain times of day, nor are they limited to the subject of STI prevention. It's a long way from the first condom commercial that ran in a Peter Sellers rerun. And another intimate adult product would follow a similar path.
To see all the photos and videos from this episode, go to cbc.ca/underTheInfluence.
It is said that baby boomers will be the first to experience a fitting bookend. They were the first generation to be swaddled in disposable diapers, and they will leave this earth clad in them too. But adult diapers were a long-standing taboo in our culture. Procter & Gamble was the longtime leader in the children's disposable diaper category with Pampers. Back in 1978, P&G launched Attends, an adult diaper for people with incontinence issues. But incontinence was a taboo subject. Nobody wanted to admit they have it. Nobody wanted to ask for it at a store. While Attends mainly sold to hospitals and other institutions, P&G was hesitant to advertise the diapers in the mainstream media and ran only a few print ads. Then, in 1983, competitor Kimberly-Clark launched Depend. Noting P&G's reluctance to break the taboo on television, the company decided to market the adult diapers with an aggressive campaign. Depend commercials showed seniors defiantly leading very active lives, golfing, jogging, and playing tennis.
I have to admit it's frustrating having a bladder control problem.
Because my real problem is finding the protection I need.
You need Depend for discreet, effective protection.
Then Depend hit on a powerful idea when it signed movie star June Allison as spokesperson.
June Allison for Depend.
Good news. America's most trusted undergarment for bladder control is better than ever. New improved Depend undergarments has added an extra layer of absorbency where protection is needed most. It's absorbency protection no other undergarment has. You can feel safer, more confident, and get better protection with new Depend. Get back into life.
Get back into life with Depend.
Allison became aware of incontinence when she realized her own mother was suffering in silence. She had stopped coming to family gatherings and withdrew from social events. So Allison recommended Depend. When Depend approached Allison to be spokesperson, she was hesitant. But her mother said to her, "The world has been wonderful to you. It's time you gave back a little something." Allison agreed and became the Depend spokesperson. Her celebrity appealed to the right age group. She had an engaging personality. And when she said Depend was, quote, "protection both mom and I could both live with," sales skyrocketed. Allison later started a foundation to raise money for research into urological diseases for seniors. Yet the taboo was so powerful, it took 7 years before two of the three major television networks agreed to run adult diaper commercials in prime time. Because Depend was the first brand to break through that barrier, it has remained the market leader for over 30 years. One of the surest signs a product has become normalized is when the mainstream media parodies the commercials, like Saturday Night Live did.
Nice point, Grandma.
Thanks. Oops, I crap my pants.
Visit your local pharmacist and just say, "Oops, I crap my pants," from Procter & Gamble.
It's believed by 2020, the adult diaper market will grow by 50%. Another recently broken taboo was on the hush-hush subject of menstruation. More specifically, how menstruation is depicted in feminine hygiene commercials. While there are many on the air, feminine hygiene ads never actually show or mention the word blood. In order to demonstrate the absorbency of a tampon or a sanitary pad, a typical ad uses blue liquid, presumably because blue is an inoffensive color. And a 2015 worldwide study revealed that across the board, blue is the world's favorite color. But UK-based MaxiPad company Bodyform decided that blue simply wouldn't do. Last year, they came out with a commercial titled Blood, aimed at breaking the taboo surrounding menstruation and sport. The ad showed multiple women training and competing strenuously in several different sports. The ballet dancer had raw, bloody toes, the soccer player had gashed knees, and the boxer had a bloody nose and scraped knuckles. The ad ended with the tagline, "No blood should hold us back." It was the first ever feminine hygiene commercial to reference blood. Because it broke through that taboo, judges awarded it a Gold Lion at the Cannes International Advertising Festival. A wider campaign called Red Dot Fit empowers women to stay active during their periods and to understand which products make it easiest to do so. It was a historic moment in feminine hygiene advertising, a broken taboo that was nearly 50 years in the making. Of course, not all taboos have to do with sex or bodily functions. In February of 2009, Esquire magazine broke a long-standing magazine taboo by gluing a small ad booklet onto its cover. That violated a long-standing guideline from the American Society of Magazine Editors. As a matter of fact, "don't print ads on covers" was the first guideline on its list. In April, ESPN and Entertainment Weekly ran ad flaps on their covers. Scholastic Parent and Child magazine actually ran ads in the bottom right-hand corner of its covers for various juice and smoothie brands. Then, that same year, Time Inc., the largest magazine publisher in North America, ran a Verizon Wireless ad on the covers of Time and Sports Illustrated. The small, single-line ad ran in the mailing label area, saying, "For best results, use Verizon." Then noted a page number that led to a traditional ad within the magazine. A senior Time magazine executive said, "You can either say this is a groundbreaking decision to put ads on covers after 91 years in business, or you can say this is a relatively modest reference that catches up to what's going on in the industry." A former Time editor didn't share either sentiment, saying the ad marked the further erosion of Time Inc.'s standards. For nearly 100 years, newspaper and magazines have quarantined advertising from editorial. But times are changing, and print publications are running into revenue problems. Front cover ads are read by a higher number of readers than regular ads, and therefore magazines can charge a premium. It was a circular moment in media history. Running ads on covers became a front cover story. A hat company in Germany broke an advertising taboo recently. The Hutt Weber Company ran a print ad that showed two sketches side by side. The first was the outline of a face with the iconic hairline and mustache of Adolf Hitler. The second showed the same face with a bowler hat on, becoming, in effect, Charlie Chaplin. The caption under the Charlie Chaplin face said, "It's the hat." It was the first advertisement in Germany to break the long-standing taboo against using the Nazi leader in any form of marketing. Needless to say, the ad generated a lot of controversy. Another long-held taboo was broken in Britain recently. A company called Love Honey, the UK's largest sex toy retailer, broke ground by advertising on television at 10 o'clock in the morning. The ad showed a fully dressed couple embracing in a passionate kiss for about 20 seconds. As they pull away from each other, they say, "Have a good day at work."
Lovehoney.co.uk, the sexual happiness people.
The commercial was approved by TV networks with stipulations that it couldn't advertise any specific sex toy, nor could it use any hint of overt sex in its messaging. Even though the founders of Love Honey were happy to be the company to break the taboo, they also said the rules were hypocritical. You can use sex to sell almost any product on TV, unless that product is a sex toy. When Woodbury's facial soap broke the sex taboo in 1911, it was a big deal. Advertising icon Albert Lasker called it one of the three big beats of modern marketing. While it was the first advertising taboo to be broken, it certainly wasn't the last. It must be noted that advertisers are clearly hesitant to break taboos. With toilet paper, condoms, and adult diapers, they were late to the party. But once those taboos were broken, it didn't take long for those products to become major advertising categories. If history has taught us anything, the most recent broken taboos will soon become familiar faces. We'll surely see more ads on the covers of magazines and front pages of newspapers. Sex toy advertising may soon become humdrum, and feminine hygiene companies may be close to retiring their blue liquid. The most unsettling story today was the German hat company that chose to use Hitler in its marketing. Does that mean advertisers will begin to mine the wounds of history for attention? Time will tell. And if they do, it's going to be no bed of roses when you're under the influence. I'm Terry O'Reilly. Under the Influence was recorded at Pirate Toronto. Series producer Debbie O'Reilly. Sound engineer Keith Oman. Theme music by Ari Posner and Ian Lefevre. Research Allison Pinches. Digital content producer Sydney O'Reilly. Check out the transcript, photos, and videos from this episode at cbc.ca/underTheInfluence.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that informational podcast from CBC as much as I did. And up next, we're just going to go and play some old-time radio and an episode of Crime and Punishment from 1947 called Mystery in the Air.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre, presented by Camel Cigarettes.
And it is now my great pleasure to confer our academic degree with honor on the most distinguished student of this class. Roderick Raskolnikov, step forward. In the history of our university, there have been few young men who have compared with him in mental brilliance, and few for whom the future held greater promise. Roderick, I've spoken for the university. Now I want to speak for myself. As a token of the esteem in which I hold you and your abilities, I want to present you with this watch.
Thank you, sir.
Read the inscription.
To Roderick Raskolnikov, may his great gifts bring him the reward of honor and good fortune. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much.
Roderick, my boy, I'm proud to have had you as one of us, and sad that you are leaving. Good luck to you, and God bless you.
Again tonight, Camel Cigarettes bring you Peter Lorre in the excitement of the great stories of the strange and unusual, of dark and compelling masterpieces culled from the four corners of world literature. Tonight, Crime and Punishment, adapted from the motion picture starring Peter Lorre and based on the novel by Fyodor Dostoevsky.
Mystery in the Air, starring Peter Lorre. Brought to you by Camel Cigarettes.
wife, Roderick Raskolnikov, went to the city to achieve honor and good fortune. But 1 year later, I had achieved neither. Oh, I had written one book, a book on crime, which I had to sell to a publisher for barely enough money to pay my first 6 months' rent. Oh, the reviews were very nice. Yes, one of them said, the subject is handled with such brilliance that one wonders whether it's the work of a genius or a great detective, or both. Genius or great detective. Can't eat reviews all the time I was starving in a garret room. Come in. Oh, it's you, Mrs. Barnum.
Yes, it's me. I haven't had a penny out of you in 6 months.
I know.
How much longer do you expect me to wait for my rent?
Well, can you stand the strain another half hour?
Oh, so you're going to pay me in half an hour?
Yes.
Just how are you going to raise the money?
Oh, that's very simple. I'm going to rob a bank.
Think you're funny, huh? Well, I don't. You're a disgrace to my house.
Maybe, but someday they'll put a sign on this house that I, Raskolnikov, had the privilege of starving here. I beg your pardon. Is there a pawnbroker? I think it's an old woman by the name of Leona. Does she live here?
Yes, one more flight up. I'll show you.
Yeah.
I'm going there myself.
Thank you very much. May I carry your package?
No. No, I can manage. It's this door here. Just ring the bell.
What do you want? Ah, oh, it's you, Sonia. Come in. Who's this? One of your gentleman friends?
No, I met him on the stairs.
Well, what have you got this time?
This Bible.
Hmm. And where did you steal this?
I didn't steal it. It's been in our family a long time.
What do you want for it?
The cover's inlaid with mother of pearl. Stones are garnets. Worth at least 100 rubles.
I'll give you 6 rubles for it.
But I...
If you don't want it, leave it. What have you got, mister?
I have a watch.
I'll take the 6.
Here you are.
You said 6 rubles. You gave me 1.
That's right, 6 rubles. Less 3 months' interest for your shawl and 2 months on the necklace and silver buckles. That makes 5 rubles. 5 from 6 is 1 ruble. Well, what are you waiting for? Want your Bible back?
No.
Well, come on, get out, get out! Common little guttersnipe. All right, mister, let me see your watch.
Here.
To Roderick Raskolnikov.
That's me.
May his great gifts bring him the reward of honor and good fortune. It's inscribed. I can't give you as much.
I want 50 rubles on it.
I'll give you 10.
All right, give me the 10.
There you are. What are you staring at? Don't look at me like that.
I'm not looking. I'm not staring. I was watching you put the young lady's Bible and my watch into that trunk. That's all.
But I've got nothing in here. Nothing but a lot of trash. A lot of trash. Get out of here.
As you say. Oh, forgive me. Oh, it's you, Miss Sonia. What are you looking for?
My ruble dropped out of my hand when she pushed me out the door.
Somebody ought to push her straight into the next world. What use is all that money to her? Is her miserly life worth 100 others like yours and mine? I'd like to take her by the throat.
You shouldn't say things like that.
Oh, that black beetle. Here's your ruble. I found it.
You didn't find that. You took a ruble out of your pocket.
I didn't know. I swear I didn't.
Well, I... Thank you. I forgot there was still some kindness in the world.
I forgot there was still some beauty in it.
What do you want at this hour? It's after midnight.
It's me, Raskolnikov, don't you remember? I've got a valuable vanity case this time.
Fine, hour this is to come around with your rubbish. But come in. Let's see this valuable vanity case.
Here.
It's heavy enough. What's it made of, lead?
Gold.
I'll believe that when I see it. Oh, what's the idea of making so many knots? I can't untie this thing.
I'll show you the idea.
Put down that poker! Put down that poker!
I will! Please. On your head, you... You dirty! You old hag! Come in. Good morning, Miss Possum. Fine day, don't you think? Very fine day, huh?
I didn't come up here about the weather.
Oh, no. It's about the money, yes. Well, I'll have it today. I promise I'll have it today.
Not about the money, either.
No, about what?
There's a policeman downstairs.
Huh? Policeman? What is he?
Here he is now. Ask him yourself.
Are you the writer of Raskolnikov?
Yes.
Well, come along with me. You're wanted at headquarters.
There must be some mistake. Yes, there must be some mistake. I haven't done anything. What have I done?
You'll find out when you get there. Come along.
Roderick Raskolnikov, trembling with fear, now stands before the clerk in the police station.
Raskolnikov.
Yeah.
Let's see. Well, you owe your landlady 30 rubles, and you refuse to vacate the premises.
Is that why? Is that why I've been brought here?
Yes. Are you going to pay, or must we throw you out?
No. I'll pay.
Quiet.
I'll pay tomorrow. No, I... Oh, it's
Quiet.
My rent. It's...
It's not funny. Quiet.
No, it's the rent, you see. Do you hear
Quiet,
it?
Quiet, I say.
30 rubles.
Nope.
That's why I've been brought here. Oh, it's one.
Stop that shouting. Now stop it. What's going on here? Who's that maniac?
He's a writer. Named Raskolnikov.
Huh? Oh, Raskolnikov. Just the man I want to see.
Me? Why, sir?
I'm Inspector Porfiry.
Oh, Commissioner.
I read your excellent book about the crime and criminals.
Oh, you flatter me, sir.
No, I really mean it. You know, I thought I knew something about the subject, but your book put me and my staff in the kindergarten class.
Okay.
I must talk to you. Come into my office.
Thank you, sir.
And by the way, perhaps you'd like to help us on a new murder case. It'll give you a chance to see how the blundering police work.
Well, a murder case when...
An old pawnbroker was killed last night.
Huh?
A well-known character named Leona.
Yes, I've heard of her.
Oh? What do you know about her?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Think you'll get him easily? Guilty man?
Who knows? We may have him now.
What do you mean?
We brought a man in this morning, a house painter. He had been working in a flat under Leona's.
Oh. Do you think he did it?
Well, it doesn't really matter. He was found with a pair of earrings. He had blood on his hands. Oh, of course, he has an explanation for these things, but he'll do as a suspect, just to keep our records clear.
Records clear. You mean that...
Of course, of course. But come, come, let's discuss your book. Let's see if your theory can be applied to this case.
My theory?
Yes. You wrote that ordinary men must obey the law because they are ordinary. But extraordinary men have the right to transgress the law.
No.
Isn't that right?
No, not exactly. What I said was that extraordinary men shouldn't be judged by ordinary standards. For example, take Napoleon if...
I doubt if Napoleon murdered the old pawnbroker.
Oh. I'm glad my theories give you a chance to be witty.
If your theory is right, it would make it a lot simpler for us policemen. If your extraordinary men had some distinguishing mark, say a medal or a ribbon, Or a resemblance to Napoleon.
What do you mean?
Like yourself, for instance. But to get back to our murderer in this case, he was ordinary enough, all right. Nothing but a stupid coward.
What do you mean?
If he hadn't been in a panic, he'd have found the old woman's money. 1,500 rubles tucked away in the mattress.
Huh?
Instead, he took a lot of junk that's no use to him, and he can't unload it. I've got my men watching every outlet.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Inspector, you've promised to show me your blundering police methods, and you certainly have. You're holding a man who's probably entirely innocent just to keep your records clear, huh?
Well, the painter will do until the real murderer comes in, and he will come in. He'll give himself up through fear. Fear of the law or of God?
Oh, yes?
In the meantime, I'll just wait.
Oh, I admit I was furious, stupid, coward indeed. But then I realized that I wasn't a coward at all in the country. And in facing the inspector so calmly, I'd learned not to be afraid. Still, I needed money, and now I didn't dare to sell any of the old woman's stuff. I determined to try my newfound courage on a publisher of my book.
Sit down, Mr. Raskolnikov. I'm glad to see you. We had very nice response on your book.
Oh, that's good. I've almost finished another one.
Oh, is that so? Oh, you might let us see it when it's done.
Well, you see, as a matter of fact, another publisher, well, he has offered me an advance of 750 rubles on it.
He has?
Yes.
Oh, the pirate. You're my discovery.
Well...
Look, I'll give you 1,000 rubles advance. Hmm? How's that?
Oh, that's fine. That's wonderful. Yes, it's wonderful. I took the money. I paid my landlady in full. I bought myself a whole new outfit of clothes. Oh, I was riding on top of the world. But then a disturbing thought occurred to me. Of course, the inspector hadn't suspected me for a moment, but undoubtedly he would find my name in the old pawnbroker's books. He might think it curious. I hadn't mentioned it myself. I decided to go and see him again, voluntarily, yes, out of my own free will. That's what an innocent man would do, or would he? Well, anyway, I'm going.
Inspector will see you in just a moment.
Thank you. I'm in no hurry.
Oh, Mr. Raskolnikov.
Sonia, what are you doing here?
The inspector sent for me. He returned my Bible. He asked me a few questions.
Questions? What kind of questions?
About the day I went to the pawnbroker.
Did he want to know anything about me?
Yes.
What did you tell him?
About the money you gave me.
Oh.
And then he wanted to know.
What? What did he want to know?
Before I knew what had happened, he made me tell him what you said.
What?
That she deserved to die.
Well, she did, she...
The inspector will see you now, Mr. Raskolnikov.
Sonia, I must see you later. Where do you live?
Catherine Street. First house from the bridge, second floor.
I'll be over as soon as I can. Wait for me.
This way, sir.
Thank you.
Ah, Mr. Raskolnikov. I'm delighted to see you again.
I've come to claim my watch.
Yeah. Your watch?
Come on, let's not beat around the bush. I hated to part with it, but I need the money, so I took it to the old woman and...
What
I...
old woman?
Oh, you know, the pawnbroker, the one we were talking about.
Oh. Oh, did you have dealings with her?
Did I? You know I had. You know I was there. I mean, isn't my name in her book?
Oh, now, wait a minute. Why, so it is. Funny, I didn't notice it.
What are you trying to do, upset me?
Upset me? No, not at all. And I'm sorry, but there's no watch listed among her effects. I'm afraid it's still in the murderer's possession.
Well, thank you very much. I must be going out.
Oh, by the way, that's a new suit, isn't it?
Hmm? Yes, it is. What of it? Why shouldn't I be wearing a new suit, huh?
Things have taken a turn for the better, eh?
Yes, things have taken a turn for the better. I sold another book.
Congratulations. I hope you'll have some theories in this one that'll help me solve this murder. We're still holding that poor wretch of a painter.
Oh. Your real murderer hasn't come in, huh?
No, not yet. But I haven't given up hope.
Oh, you're very optimistic. That's good. Suspect anyone in particular?
Oh, I suspect anyone and everyone.
That's good.
I'll admit now that for a time I even connected you with the murder.
Me?
Yes. You know how a policeman's mind functions.
No, I don't.
I began piecing things in a pattern. Your desperate poverty, the fact you almost fainted when I mentioned the murder the first time.
Oh.
Your talk of Superman being above the law.
Oh, now I can see.
You're going around town flashing all that money,
yes,
which
yes.
I didn't know until just now came from your publisher.
You had me followed, huh?
Well, a matter of routine.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. If I were the guilty man, I'd be too smart to try to sell that junk. I'd have gone into the country and buried it under stone. You hear me? Yes, under a big, heavy stone.
So?
Come on, accuse me of murder if you like, but don't insult me by believing that I'd overlook 1,500 rubles in a mattress. Try your clumsy methods on halfwits, like that poor fool you're going to sacrifice, just to keep your records clear.
But I'm not accusing you. I don't accuse a man I think is guilty if I have no proof. I just sit and wait.
Yeah, you sit and wait. Stop playing this cat and mouse game with me. If you think you have a case against me, come on, arrest me or bring me to trial. I'll show you how.
Yes, I did it.
Inspector,
I did it.
This man just confessed.
Yes, I confess. I'm guilty. I'm the murderer. Punish me.
You're lying, you fool. You didn't kill her.
I hit her over the head with a poker. I hate her.
You idiot. You didn't even know about her until we arrested you. You didn't know anything about it until we beat it into you. Take him away, officer. He wants to go to Siberia that badly.
I'm guilty, I tell you. I'm guilty.
Get him out of here.
Oh, what a triumph for your methods, Inspector. First you tried to make him confess, and now you try to make him believe he's innocent. Doesn't your conscience ever bother you?
No. Let the real murderer suffer from his conscience. And it'll trouble him. He's no Napoleon. No, he's not hard enough. He'll come in, and I'll be waiting for him. I'll be waiting.
Good luck.
Where have you been?
Oh, I'm walking the streets. I don't know how long. I know it's late. I had to talk to you, Sonia. I may never see you again.
You're going away?
Yes.
Where are you going?
I don't know.
Then why?
Because I'm free now. Yes, I'm free. Free to go where I please and do what I please.
Free? From what?
Police. They suspected me of the murder. Oh, it's all over now. Sonia, come away with me.
Did they find the guilty man?
They had him all along. He confessed this morning.
Who was it?
Oh, a painter who worked in a house. Why all these questions? Leave me alone. I've been questioned enough. Please put that Bible away. I don't want to be reminded of that old hag.
And Jesus said, take away the stone.
What stone? What stone are you talking about? How do you know I hid it under a stone?
It's the stone under which Lazarus was buried. Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, thou hast heard me. And when he had thus spoken, cried in a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he that was dead came forth.
Sonia. Sonia!
You should kneel to me.
Have mercy on me, Sonia. I killed that old woman. I killed her.
Why did you do it?
I was mad. What shall I do now?
I don't know what to tell you. Because you have no faith.
But if I did have faith.
Then I would tell you to confess.
Huh?
Atone for what you've done.
Confess to the police?
How else can you save the one who's being punished in your place?
Confess and go to Siberia and rot in prison, Sonia? How can you ask me to do that?
Because I love you.
Sonia. I know it now. I have faith. You have given it to me. You have made me see myself, as I really was, and just a coward who thought himself brave. All right, Sonia, I'll go and do as you say.
Oh, my darling, I'll wait for you. I'll always wait for you. Forever.
Come in.
Good evening, Inspector.
Good evening, Raskolnikov. I've been expecting you. I've been expecting you for quite a long time.
Now, here is Peter Lorre for a final word.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, in a way, this is my final word, because tonight our summer series of classic mysteries comes to a close. I feel deeply grateful for your response to our efforts. Also, at this time, I'd like to thank our sponsor, makers of Camel Cigarettes, for giving me the opportunity. And I certainly feel compelled to express my deep appreciation for all those men who have worked with me, especially our director, Mr. Cal Coon. Next Thursday night, Camel's Bob Hawk Show, one of America's favorite quiz shows, will be heard over these same NBC stations. They tell me Mr. Hawk doesn't murder anybody. Oh, he just quizzes them. Well, to each his own. Good night.
Crime and Punishment has been adapted from the screenplay Crime and Punishment by arrangement with Columbia Pictures, producers of the Technicolor musical Down to Earth. Listen next Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Mountain Time, and 7 p.m. Pacific Time for the Bob Hawk Show over these same NBC stations. Music for Mystery in the Air was composed and conducted by Paul Barron. The artists supporting Mr. Lorre tonight were Henry Morgan, Peggy Weber, Joe Kearns, Ben Wright, Louis Van Ruten, Gloria Ann Simpson, and Herbert Butterfield. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
I'd like to thank you for joining me tonight here at MSS. Have a good evening, folks, and thanks for listening. Bye for now.